accession number 19767, Reel 3.
Gunter von Vaskowski, Reel 3. You're just going to tell me about the equipment at hand.
Yes, we got it out in the end to France. I think we had to wait in Paris. We had to go through Paris, and we were stuck in one of the tunnels there, or probably there was another air raid, or they didn't want to show the equipment, and we were hidden away in one of the tunnels there for up till the night. And we reached our unit, which was near Rouen, the little village called Bermonville, near Fécamp. So that was my first complete unit in France.
Do you know the name of this unit, the number?
I got it somewhere here. 184, I believe. 184 Battery, which I'm telling. It was part of the 84th Division.
And you're still a lieutenant?
Yes.
What was your job with the unit?
I think forward observation officer, really. There was a gun officer, and the captain, and yes, we were two lieutenants and one captain, and I was a forward observation officer. And we stayed in Bermonville, well, up till the invasion came, really. Later, if you think about it, we were in alarm situation on the night before the actual invasion took place, only because somebody said, oh, this is what we were told then, somebody in Rouen said, well, the invasion took place, or my... Anyhow, we were in full situation. We were waiting for the parachutes to come down and anything, but nothing happened. And so the next night, when it happened, we were in quite ordinary position. Up till some of these dummy paratroopers landed, they came down and made a hell of a noise, so we sent people out, but we discovered very soon that they were just dummies. Otherwise, there's only straightforward military work. That means exercise. It changed only then by the... When did the Hitler the assassination tried there?
July 20th.
And I think then afterwards we were... Suddenly we had to abandon our military greeting and had to use the Hitler salute there, which was a little bit annoying to us, but what could you do?
Why were you so annoyed?
Well... We were not really completely Hitler followers. I think the Wehrmacht at that time meant more to us than the party parts. And another part I remember was when Rommel was injured. That went like a bushfire really around. And then we moved, the division was moved by the end of July, I believe, when they realized there wouldn't be an invasion. execution on the Pas de Calais, it would be the saying that was the invasion. I think we were kept there because Hitler believed still that the main invasion would take part in the Pas de Calais. And moving up there, the other impression, which is quite deep in me, was when we came up to Le Havre. And for some reason, our battery was pushed to the coast and then crossed the Seine by Elbeuf, I believe. And I was sent up as forwarding observation officer there to the coast. And suddenly I came up to near the coast to Le Havre and saw this one can't describe it really, to see the bay full of ships there. There were hundreds of ships there, and some firings and some never have seen anything like it. Well, nobody from the western side probably did see it, because it was so unbelievable. I mean, there were some bodies floating in the water. You could see it from the observation post there. But and at that time, I felt really, you can't compete with it. I didn't stay that long. I think it was only for three, four hours, and we had the order come back, and then we went on the move again. But it was quite incredible. I said it to somebody else on the D-Day. I had somebody here wanted to know my experience. And if you know the Tor Bay, Lime Bay, and you are on Brixham Harbour, they are right on the end of it where the lighthouse is. This is a boat, and you see the whole bay in front of you. This is the feeling I had probably there, but it's only much larger, and hundreds of ships there. I mean, unbelievable. And then we crossed over the Seine. We are involved, and the main thing we were involved then was the the Hitler's idea to cut the Americans off after they broke through, after Patton went through, and cut them off at Avranches, I believe, Avranches. And there we were embossed with several other panzer divisions. And I believe our divisions, we were cut off to several divisions, helping several divisions. We were not operating as an own unit. I think we were part of the 16th Panzer Division. And of course, that was a failure. Even there, I was personally, as a forward observation, been cut off several times, and then we walked along out of the pocket at night. We moved mostly at night, really. Our whole unit moved at night, because during the daytime you couldn't move. You were shot to pieces by the Typhons or any other Allied aircraft there. So we got out all right. The offensive to, I think it was near Martin, offensive stopped. We couldn't get any further. And then we were mainly American troops were against us, we were able to get some success with our 88s against American panzer tanks. But in general, after 3 or 4 days, we were retreating.
What did you think of the American troops to fight against?
We were told beforehand that the harder soldier is the English soldier and not the American. That was battle experience we had in Vermont Wheelston. I remember then there was, after the first D-Day landing, we had battle experience. I think that was a normal procedure to send it to all troops who may come in contact with either Americans or English troops. And I remember only then that they gave more points to the English soldier than to the Americans. Otherwise, they seemed to be quite jolly. It was I know when we escaped of one of these pockets again, and the Americans were in one little forest there, and seemed to be quite happy there. They had their fires there. They had music was coming out. So it seemed to be like not a grim war as it was in Russia.
Can you tell me more about your experience with typhoon aeroplanes?
Well, whatever it was, we had quite a few dead and injured people, and lost a lot of equipment.
Was your unit attacked by typhoons? Your actual guns?
Not in our gun position, no, but I think on our movements when we went to different positions, therefore normally everything stopped by daylight coming in, and we tried to disappear then into sheltered accommodation or forest or whatever it was.
How much of civilians did you see in France?
Very frightened people beginning of the invasion, when we were still north of the Seine, civilians fleeing. In general, we had really our unit. I mean, I can't talk of other units, but our unit had very good relations with the French. They seemed to go along. Well, what else could they do? I mean, they couldn't do very much different. Many had their families they stayed with. Not everybody was staying in barracks. I mean, the people stayed with families. I think in general there was quite a good relationship. It later what you can hear about the underground work, I think that was mainly in bigger towns, in little villages. It didn't happen there. At least it didn't happen in our place.
So you were escaping from the Falaise pocket.
Yeah.
What happened to you then?
We got one gun and one tractor out. I think this is the other picture which sticks in my mind. There was this Russian one and this one here. When we came into St. Lambert. And the first sight was the place was full of blown up horses, dead soldiers, equipment. Chaos, complete chaos. I believe Eisenhower said later on that you could walk for 100 yards only on dead bodies, more or less. It was absolute chaos. We didn't know where to go. We arrived there in the morning, and I think I was on one of the guns with the big tractor. I call it tractor, but it's a soup machine. It's a much bigger vehicle, really. It took about 10, 15 people on there on top of it. And we couldn't go any further because the road was closed by wooden equipment and horses, which were in the middle of their belly was like that, blown up. And so we came onto this, was a big plane, and you could see everywhere there were some leftover staff cars, staff, everything. Everything, your unit and part of it was not motorized, part of it was still horse-drawn at that time, some of the divisions. It was a big field. It was absolutely chaos. We didn't know where to go. We went around there and the daylight started, so we were working on the idea that in a minute the planes would arrive. And there was no proper direction what to do. So what we managed to do is then we took one gun and one tractor out, and the general direction, I think there was a little bridge over, can't remember what the river was called. And general direction was that way, towards the Seine. And we managed to get one gun and one Zugmaschine out. The rest of it we had to abandon. Actually, the whole unit fell to bits. Then the shelling started. I think after about 2 or 3 hours, there were little groups there, and we said, well, we just go out that way. There we were under fire from, I believe they were Polish, there was a Polish unit there somewhere. But we got through and we escaped the pocket. But most of it stayed in the pocket, really didn't come out. But it was a Dante's Inferno, really. One can't describe it. I saw some pictures later on, but very difficult to see it. We saw something similar, not bordering what happened there, in the Iraq War. You know, there was one unit was caught, and there you could see everything there, but it was part of it only. This was on a much larger scale.
But you weren't wounded yourself?
No. I got out all right. And my unit was all right. We got one gun out, one Zugmaschine, and we left it at the Seine because we couldn't get it over. All the bridges were blown up. And we only got out by handmade rafts. We cut down trees and bound it together and then steered it over. Some people tried to swim over, and of course they were taken away by the flood. I don't think we saw any of them again. And got out that way. I got my car, my little car, I think it was a Skoda car. I got that one out, right, because that could go just on that float, but any heavier stuff like gun or whatever you couldn't take. So we left that, was left over on the Seine. And then we met again in Bermondville. This is for some reason we had the order, well, meet there. And then there was a headlong flight because there was no unit, no orderly defense system, no command system. We fled right through out of France into Belgium. And there was a sort of minimum command structure, but nothing to speak of. I mean, that was only delaying tactics than anything else. I think after the war there was a theory, instead of trying to advance on any part of your front, I think Montgomery thought if he had all material available to his disposition, he would push right through Belgium onto the Rhine. I think the war could have finished 6 months earlier, because there was no unit to stop it at that time. And then we went through Brussels. I remember my only interest was to see the Palace of the King there in Brussels, nothing else. And I didn't find it. And then we were assembled again near Arnhem in Oosterbeek. And of course then we were the people who were influenced or saw the Arnhem landing right on top of our head.
What did it look like?
Oh, fantastic. I know, it was a Sunday morning. We had breakfast and we were sitting in our at the breakfast, and then suddenly again these dummy paratroop scene came down, and of course we had experience so we didn't bother very much, but we went outside and we could see the what do you call it, the Lastensegler, the planes which were pulled.
The glider
released just on top of us, really. Fantastic. We didn't know what to say. It was completely... So there was alarm, and of course most of our unit A, we didn't have any heavy guns, and only about 30-40% had any other guns with them. They were gone. So as a unit, we were not complete, and of course I had then our captain said, Waskowski, you take everybody who has a gun, and then you will join up so and so and go to the landing place. And this is what we did. I mean, the rest of the unit, we had a few coaches there. I think they were more or less coaches than proper military vehicles. They disappeared, and I had the order with, I think we were about 30, 40 men, to join up with another one, and then we advanced to the landing place. And I believe it was the first English land, air landing division?
First airborne division.
Airborne division, yes. And we found all these gliders on a big field there, and then some of us started, but no troops. They were all marching into Arnhem, except for one lieutenant. He was, I don't know why, he was caught, he was made prisoner. And he suddenly appeared there in our little room. We had a sort of headquarters there. And I remember telling him, the war is over for you. Exchange cigarettes. But then some started to try to destroy the gliders. And then, of course, order came through. Now there may be valuable material, leave the gliders as they are. And then we were incorporated into another unit. I believe that was an SS unit. And then there was some bitter fighting for about 2-3 days. And then we were pulled out of Arnhem and ordered to Groningen in Holland.
Were you acting as an infantryman at Arnhem?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you describe what the fighting was like? Some of your experience.
Hard. There were sometimes you hardly could see. There was some shooting in the forest, for example, and then you had to guess really how the noise came from where your friend and foe is, more or less. We didn't have any heavy. We didn't have any heavier guns. I was surprised to see there some old French tanks appearing there, which were steered by, I think, some SS columns there, probably where they came from, I don't know. But we didn't have any heavier armor. But I don't think the English had a chance, really, there. How the position was at that time. It was quite early discovered by Model. I think he was the commander there, and he landed more or less on his footstep. And there was no chance for them to succeed. But this is, you see, we were left time to reorganize. If there would have been a strong push after the Falaise run, after they crossed the Seine into Belgium, I think war would have been over.
So, in the fighting at Arnhem, were you at Oosterbeek?
Yeah, we were originally stationed in Oosterbeek.
But when the fighting you were in, was that at Oosterbeek?
No, that was somewhere else, and I can't remember where it was. It was in the forest, and we were pushed up there. I tried after the war to find out which unit we were in, but I couldn't remember that anymore. Can't tell you.
What happened to you at Groningen?
Groningen. Now, that was where I was captured later on. That was the end of the war. But, no, in between is when really we came to the... After Arnhem, we had our battery again, we had our guns again, and we were stationed in the West Wall, near Cleve, was the town, name of the town. And the place, our battery was the place where later the breakthrough was from the final push into Germany. I don't know what this battle called. Battle of the Westwald.
The Reichswald?
Reichswald. Reichswald. And our battery, the place our battery was, I saw it in later... books which were written about it, was of course the place where our battery was stationed, and there's even the battery position is marked there. And I think they claimed later on that was the heaviest bombardment during the whole war on that particular place. And I wasn't there. It was my battery, but I was... I was commanded away in January, I believe, to another place near Groningen. But we spent quite a time in the Reichswald there.